This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. In fact, this week, perhaps from quite a long way afield. Now, you might have had your summer holiday, perhaps you've still got one to look forward to, but this year in particular, our holidays have come under fire. Locals in Barcelona say they're sick of us. Inhabitants of the Canary Islands plea for us to respect their land. And Bali has implemented a tourist tax to address over-tourism. So I wondered, can our summer break be sustainable, both from the points of view of the local people who put up with us and the local environment, which we often put under huge pressure? And what should we be looking out for when we're booking our next holiday to ensure that it's as ethical as possible? I spoke to Dr. Brendan Canavan. Brendan is a marketing academic with a focus on tourism and with a PhD investigating the sustainability of tourism in small islands. He's at the University of Nottingham. I started by asking Brendan whether our holidays could ever be a force for good, or whether in actual fact the impact was so great that we should really just give up going on holidays.
No, I think definitely we should carry on going on holiday. I'm a tourism academic, so I'm perhaps biased in favour of tourism. I accept it has lots of things that, you know, could be improved and maybe it needs to change, particularly in certain places. But overall, I think tourism is fantastic. It broadens people's horizons. It gives us, you know, life-changing experiences. There are lots of examples in the literature of people, you know, making friends and romantic partners for life through holiday encounters, people being inspired to start businesses. People often return from a holiday feeling really reinvigorated and able to cope with their life, and it helps them to get through the day to day. But also there's loads of research looking at how people often can really radically change their life following a holiday. You know, they might get divorced and have the confidence to do that. They change jobs. They maybe relocate and move to the other side of the world for life and for work and for pleasure. So I think tourism is really inspirational, and I think it really can help to liberate us and make us nicer, more open-minded, self-aware, and connected human beings.
Yeah. Well, we certainly enjoy our holidays, don't we? And I suppose that is a positive to take from them. So let's start with when to go on holiday. It's often nice to avoid crowds if we can, but I wondered if it makes any difference to the impact of holiday, whether we choose to go when things are very busy or whether they're when they're quieter.
Yeah, there are swings and roundabouts of peak season tourism. So on the one hand, we're all constrained by our calendar, of course. You know, maybe we choose to go at different times, but because of work and, you know, family, we have to often go during the summer. Peak season, the problem of that is it's very crowded. It's not perhaps as much fun being a tourist. And also it's very stressful for hosts, you know, having to accommodate loads of people in a place which normally might have, you know, quite limited infrastructure and, you know, not so much accommodation. It means that things like there can be problems with pollution and overconsumption of water. So particularly small islands like in the Caribbean struggle with that. You know, they can't provide enough fresh water for, you know, a massive increase in the population during the summer. And the sewage system often gets overloaded, and then that can leak into the sea and it creates all sorts of problems. There are some upsides of the peak season, though. In places like the Mediterranean, there's been quite a lot of research, particularly in the 90s, which was looking at Greek islands. And often people appreciate the contrast between a busy summer where they get to work hard and make a lot of money, and then things quieten down during the autumn through to the spring. And it enables people to balance their traditional way of life with then a sort of vibrant, intense period where they get to meet people and make money. So I think it depends on the location where you go. It depends on the particular sort of needs and preferences of local people. And there are arguments in either case.
Okay, really interesting points. So how about getting there? I think we all feel guilty if we do fly places, but sometimes it's unavoidable. So have you got any tips about, you know, how our flying can be a little less impactful, or how about some tips for other ways to get there?
Yeah, so I think I'll try not to be unequivocal with this one. When you fly, there have been things like carbon offsetting schemes. Sadly, I think they're fairly empty, so I wouldn't have much trust or faith in those. I think realistically, if you are going to make the choice to fly, you need to be honest about the fact that that does produce a lot of carbon, and that is obviously going to contribute to climate change. how much we want to feel guilty about those things is perhaps up to us to decide. I think we all do have individual responsibility to try to do our bit for the planet. But at the same time, the carbon footprint was created by Shell and British Petroleum to try to emphasise individual responsibility rather than perhaps the fact that, you know, 70 large corporations have produced upwards of 80% of all emissions since the 1950s. So we are fairly insignificant, and the odd flight isn't the thing that tips us over into ecological collapse. So be responsible, be careful, but I think mainly be honest. Don't look for an easy excuse such as carbon offsetting. Basically, I think what you need to do is perhaps fly a bit less often. Maybe you treat yourself to an occasional big holiday rather than having lots of frequent smaller ones. And maybe if you can then look perhaps to undertake more local tourism where you can use other types of transportation. You know, here in England, I'm based in Nottingham. There are loads of places that you can get to really easily on the train and on coaches. Or if you carpool with friends and family, you know, we sometimes go on trips together to go to London, to go shopping and stuff, me and my friends. And if you do these things, it does help to reduce your carbon footprint. Brecon Beacons National Park just put out a call for people to go to the national park on the bus, because the carbon impact of that is really small compared to if everyone drives. And obviously, it's not just the carbon emissions, but it's where do you park all these cars? How do you create the space for them in a small countryside area? So looking for public transport, I think, can help to reduce your carbon footprint and also engages you more with the local landscape. It can often be quite interesting what you overhear on the bus. You can sit and you can space out, you can read a book, you can look out the window at the landscape going past. I think it's just changing your mindset where you think, okay, I don't mind going a bit slower. I don't mind having to share with other people. Look on the bright side of that rather than the negatives.
Yes, that's right. And actually, perhaps treat it as part of the holiday. Like you say, have a little bit of a change of pace and appreciate the different experience that it's giving you. So what should we look out for then when it comes to accommodation? There's been a lot about the negative impacts of Airbnb, local people not being able to afford anywhere to live. Any suggestions for how we can somehow make that problem a little easier?
Yeah, I think Airbnb is a tricky one. The evidence for and against it is quite limited at the moment. So a number of studies that I've seen in London and Barcelona have suggested that Airbnb has had a very small impact in terms of rental and housing prices compared to, you know, other things, much bigger things that are going on with the economy. And I think in general, that's often the case with tourism. Tourists are very easy to criticise because, you know, they do stand out. You know, we try and blend as a tourist, but I think we always stand out a mile. You know, we look a bit daft with our cameras and our shorts and stuff. So Airbnb, I don't know whether it's as bad as people make out. There are sometimes local issues of whether Airbnb properly records and pays taxes, you know, whether Airbnb is being managed by a couple of sort of major landlords who then pretend to be independent people selling off their spare room, that type of thing. So it is tricky. And I think if you are going to use Airbnb, maybe try to look out for people who are genuinely a homeowner who are renting out their spare room and who are sharing their space with you, because that can help them to pay their own rent. You know, and there's a lot of evidence that people can be quite entrepreneurial using things like Airbnb, couch surfing and other platforms like that. There are advantages then instead of perhaps doing things like staying in a traditional hotel, because hotels tend to often pay local taxes and they're often integrated into the local economy quite successfully. They also employ quite a lot of people. But again, nothing's ever perfect. So if you are going to stay in a hotel, you might just want to look for a local independent hotel rather than perhaps staying in a big multinational chain, because often local businesses, they tend to contribute more to the local economy, whereas international businesses tend to often send a big chunk of the money back to their headquarters, usually located somewhere else.
So just onto the location now. Now, do you know what I was thinking about it? We do love visiting small islands, don't we? You know, we've got the Canaries, Mallorca, there's the Greek islands. If you go a bit further, Caribbean, like you just mentioned, the Maldives, the Seychelles. Really, so many of our favourite holiday destinations are small islands, aren't they? And you've particularly looked at these. What are their particular problems when it comes to tourism?
Yes, small islands are fascinating. They're a world in miniature. I think that's what's so appealing about them. You know, there's something sort of very human about a place that is surrounded by water that's cut off that you can get to know by itself. So small islands, they really benefit from tourism. I come from the Isle of Man and we love tourists there. You know, we're very keen to have tourists arrive because they not only bring money into the local economy and they create jobs in things, you know, like shops and cafes and stuff where a lot of people, you know, when I was growing up, you know, it was good for having a Saturday job. They're also fun. You know, small islands are often quite isolated. They're often cut off. It takes time and money to leave an island to get to a larger place, a larger city. So if you've got tourists coming, they bring a bit of animation, a bit of excitement. The downside, of course, if you have tourists on a small island, is often small islands are very sort of peaceful, they're very traditional, they're often a bit of a backwater. And so if you start to have a large influx of outsiders, it can be stressful. And it's just like when you host people at your house, you know, people are intruding on your space, they're using your resources. And so you'd hope that guests would be polite and would be friendly. It's not always the case. But, you know, hosting is stressful. And I think small islands, they have a particular sort of peaceful way of life that can lead them to get a bit overwhelmed if they're not careful. And when you start to have massive amounts of tourism, such as in Majorca, where they've been having protests at the minute, and Tenerife, some of the Greek islands, I think obviously it does get to the point of over-tourism where you've simply got too many people to handle.
Yes. And how about the pressure on resources? I'm thinking of water in particular. You mentioned the problems in the Caribbean with sufficient sewerage, but small islands often have very limited water resources, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. So the ecological capacity of islands is quite small. So particularly things like water and sewage systems, often a lot of infrastructure. It can be as simple as physical space because they're often quite small and confined. There isn't really space to distribute tourists. You know, they get off the boat or the plane, and they can completely dominate and swamp an area. And it can be very hard for local people to move around and do their shopping or go to work and do their day-to-day life. So sometimes you can get things like inflation can happen when people compete for resources. And so water, food, housing, all of these things are often in short supply in islands. And if tourists start arriving and consuming those things or buying houses for second homes, that type of thing, the impact is often disproportionately quite serious.
Yeah. So would you suggest that we're particularly sensitive about our water use if we are visiting somewhere that is a small island, or is just somewhere, so many places now actually are under quite a lot of water pressure? I was hearing that Sicily is having a drought, which is putting them in problems.
Yes, absolutely. I think tourists should always think of themselves as good guests. They should always try to be a good guest wherever they're staying, because these problems, as you said, are global. Climate change is now affecting all of us. But often we see these problems most immediately obvious in certain places. So yes, small islands tend to be overwhelmed faster than maybe a large city, you know, or an inland destination. Poorer places, if you're visiting developing countries, they often get overwhelmed quicker, particularly people who have less financial independence themselves. They get pushed out first. Mountainous regions, Arctic regions, places where climate change is most immediately obvious and most severe, and where there is the strongest sort of disparity between people who have money and people who don't have money. There are places where you have to be extra careful.
And I suppose one of the things that we probably do have to be careful with is things like when we're buying food, because that can have a big impact, can't it?
Yes, definitely. So I think linking with your last question, being a good guest, I think, means two things. On the one hand, I think it means maybe consuming less. So being conscious of your presence in a place, maybe, you know, trying to sort of be a bit more modest, a bit more slow and peaceful, a bit less demanding is often very helpful. So perhaps be cautious about your water usage. You can change your consumption to make it a bit more thoughtful. So consume less water is one thing. You know, when you are doing your shopping, you're looking what to eat, you're looking what to drink, what souvenirs to collect. I think good advice would be to tune into what's available locally. So what are local businesses selling? What grows in the local climate? You know, what seems to be available. So if things are abundant, go for it, enjoy it if it's in season. So apples in a few months' time here in the UK, go for it. Eat as many apple pies as you can. But other times of the year, in other places, you might want to perhaps, you know, forego certain things. So a classic example is the Maldives, you know, a very high-end luxury destination. Almost everything that is consumed by tourists in the Maldives has to be imported. And so it's flown from all over the world. It has a very large carbon footprint. It's very expensive. It's very indulgent. Lots of local people don't get any of the benefit of these products and these goods. They're often cut off on their own little private island where they all live, for instance, you know, that tourists don't interact with. So I think really it's just trying to be sensitive and think, is this appropriate? Is this available to other people locally? Is this just being self-indulgent?
I wondered what you thought, actually, thinking about how we behave on holiday. I wondered what you thought about Copenhagen's CopenPay pilot project. So what they did was the National Tourist Board introduced a program to encourage climate-friendly, sustainable behaviour. So, for instance, if you arrive somewhere on a bicycle, you might get a free drink, or if you did a bit of litter picking, you might get a free meal. What do you think about that?
I think it's really interesting, and I admire them for thinking about it and trying to get a debate started. I think it'd be very difficult to implement it. There's been a few sort of initiatives like this in the past, particularly with things like local currencies, whereby they try to have sort of like their own independent currency, and you can collect it and spend on that. And that often has, you know, maximizes benefits for local people. Tends to be tricky to get them to stick and to have everyone buy into that. So I think if you start to make it more complicated, you decide, you know, there'll be lots of arguments over which behaviours should we reward, which ones do we want to encourage or not. And people are going to have differences of opinion there. But I love the idea. I think it's a good idea to try to sort of positively encourage people to change their behaviour, not just to do the approach which like France has done, which is maybe to restrict other behaviours such as short-haul flights. They both can work, but the carrot and the stick, it's nice to see a carrot.
Yes. And then finally, Brendan, I just wondered, are you going to be going on holiday this year? Or have you been somewhere? And are you able to tell us a bit of the reasoning behind what you chose?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So I've had two holidays. I've had one and I've got one coming up. So the first holiday, I went out of season and I went in April to Wales and I stayed in a caravan on a caravan park. And the reason I did that was because it was very, very cheap. And I also like it when things are peaceful because I wanted to have a walking holiday. And I travelled on the train. And so it was fairly low impact. And I did deliberately try to do that. And I had a really nice time. So local tourism can be wonderful. It can be really peaceful and really enjoyable if you're able to do it. And then in a few weeks' time, I'm going to go to Berlin. So I love having city breaks. I really enjoy art galleries and museums. And I've done all the ones in the UK many, many times. And I like to travel to different parts of Europe. And that is a bit selfish in a sense because, you know, I'm going to fly. And I know that will contribute to carbon emissions, my carbon footprint this year. Also, I think on balance, tourism is very rewarding. It's very enjoyable. But when I go, I'll try to be a good guest. I'll try to tune into local Berlin culture as best I can. I'll look out for local businesses that I can shop at if possible. I'll take public transport. It seems to be very cheap. I've done my research to go on the underground train and the tram. And that'll be a nice way to sort of get a feel for local people's day-to-day life, local culture. So I hope that overall it's a fairly low impact holiday because I'll try to be a respectful and a good tourist.
Sounds brilliant, Brendan. Thank you so much for telling us all that today.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, I don't know about you, but that's certainly given me some food for thought. I'd really like to hear what you think. Do get in touch via email on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix 92.6 on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm going to be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thanks for listening.